Hello and a warm welcome to the Mission Chunya podcast. I'm your host, Girish Shivakumar. It feels really good and it's really exciting for me to bring to you yet another episode on the podcast platform. So the podcast, as you know, has a new episode released every other week. So thanks to all the loyal listeners who tune into the podcast every other week, download it and listen to it, and also give me some feedback. Especially the last episode with Neil Matthews has received a lot of feedback, a lot of positive feedback. People are really happy to know that a person can be as passionate as Neil, and Neil has in fact written to me and he's told that a lot of people have in fact contacted him. So it feels really good that the medium is being utilized, the message is getting across to a lot of people, and people are definitely taking action towards the Mission Chunya, or rather moving towards a zero carbon economy. So with that, let's move to this week's episode. So who's my guest, where does he work, and what does he do?
My name is Nikhil. I'm currently looking at international expansion at a company called MCOPA. MCOPA Solar is based in East Africa and is a leading pay-as-you-go solar provider with over 800,000 customers spread across a couple of countries. And I spent a lot of time doing work in energy access, looking at different ideas around solar and distribution in the Middle East, India, and most recently in Africa.
Quick things first, what is a pay-as-you-go solar?
Great. So I think pay-as-you-go, by the way, the little sense is any product or service that you take to customers where they have to pay for what they consume based on a usage basis, which means you don't have to pay for more than what you consume. And I think the best example of this is, or the best parallel for this is the prepaid mobile phone world that we all are familiar with. You recharge for X amount of rupees or X amount of dollars and you consume that. And that is very much a pay-as-you-go service. And that now being adopted into energy and selling energy as a fee for service is what is called pay-as-you-go.
So pay-as-you-go solar, as you might have heard, has become ubiquitous. So where did it all begin?
So as I said, success has a lot of fathers, and I'm sure there are more than one version of how pay-as-you-go really took off. But here's how I've seen it, and here's how MCOPA started at least. In 2010, Nick Hughes and Jesse Moore came together and said, what are the products and services that you can take to people in rural East Africa and make it relevant? Because they had just built M-Pesa before, and M-Pesa allows you to collect money from people remotely. So just for background, M-Pesa is a leading mobile payment services in the world that about 95% of adults use in Kenya. So everybody has a mobile phone and they're all paying each other and they're all paying merchants for that. So having laid that foundation of M-Pesa, they came together and said, how do we take other products and services to individuals that are far away and need them? And they realized that energy was a huge part of the expenditure in a rural customer's sort of monthly expenditure. So they would spend anything between 10 to 30% of their monthly income on energy. And when you're talking energy, you're literally talking of candles, kerosenes, and not the, you know, clean fuel. And this is bad for health and also just bad for the environment. So they said, is there a way for us to build a product or a service where people can pay for energy remotely? And the way they designed the product was putting a meter onto the energy product that could turn on and turn off the device depending on how people pay. So it's very much like how the prepaid cell phone market took off, where you keep recharging for the amount that you want to consume. And Nick Hughes believed that that meter was a very underutilized asset. So they tried to combine their experience of mobile telecom background and said, why don't we put a meter into the energy product and allow people to pay through digital money and make energy affordable almost on a pay-as-you-go basis rather than needing to buy the product outright. So this was one of the early sort of starts of this industry that's now called pay-as-you-go solar. And of course, there were a few other companies as well trying to toy with the idea of energy as a service or energy on a pay-as-you-go basis. And most of it happened here in East Africa, or the most successful ones happened here in East Africa. And now it's a big industry with many more players and much more evolved models. But this is one of the origins of where pay-as-you-go really took off. So talking 2010, 2012. However, I have a different version to this as well, that back in 95, Dr. Hari Shande, who's the founder of a company called Celco, tried to do pay-as-you-go without having the kind of technology that was available. What he did was get a person to go and rent out lights to people who wanted it on a daily basis, and he would charge them every day. So show up at your house and say, Girish, do you want light? And here, pay me 10 rupees and I'll install this light for you today evening. And so they had tried this model around pay-as-you-go, but the tech did not exist. The battery technology did not exist. Mobile telephone wasn't a thing. So the idea was, I think, sowed somewhere in the late 90s with Harish and in Selco. But I think it came together beautifully when technology, digital payments, and mobile phones sort of took off in the late 2010s.
That's a really wonderful story, Nikhil. I'm sure you rightly pointed out the story of Harish Shande and the way he started Selco. I'm sure internationally, when people hear of pay-as-you-go solar, they don't relate it to what Harish Shande did in 1995. So thanks for pointing it out. That's a good perspective to have, because people generally forget about how he started and how he scaled up Selco in India. Now, talking of particularly in Africa, it's been over a decade or nearly a decade now. So how has the sector grown in this period? I'm sure you have seen the sector grow by a big factor. So how do you summarize this growth in sub-Saharan Africa, for example?
I think, going back in the early days of 2010, 2012, when it was largely an idea, there were many macro factors that didn't make it as favorable as it is today. So first is understanding, pay-as-you-go as a sector from investor point of view was very minimal, which is every time you went to an investor and said, I want to do pay-as-you-go and collect money from people who don't really have a bank account, but they have a digital identity. Investors would really not be sure about this entire model and want to bet on that. Now, fast forward to 2018 and 19, people are able to raise debt and banks are wanting to give guarantees for companies that are doing pay-as-you-go because there's so much more reliability, there's so much more credibility and so much more understanding of the sector. The other things are also things like the cost of GSM module. So when M-Kopa started off, they said they want to put a GSM module in every battery that can communicate back and forth with the server and the customer's battery to really help us understand how they're using the product, but also enable digital payments through the GSM module. GSM was quite expensive then. You're talking, $10 to $15 a module, and it seemed pretty crazy to put a GSM module into a product then. But we, as a company, bet that the price of the GSM module will go down, technology will get better, data will get cheaper, telephone will reach everywhere. So these are the kind of bets that, the business had to make. And now I think we're seeing the fruits of some of the hard work, not just by M-Kopa, but, many other pioneers who had to really lay the groundwork around distribution models, technology availability, kind of platforms that you build, and working closely with telecom companies to tell them that, hey, this is a great way for you to partner with solar companies to further energy access, but also help customers use more mobile phones. So I think the sector has grown a lot. The last 10 years, it has a lot of maturity. Investors are much more. And even the impact is quite significant. The report by Googler says that between 2010 and 2019, there are about 33 million people that have got access to energy through solar products. And of course, they do include Pico Solar and lanterns as well, but that's quite a serious number of people who have been able to get access to energy through solar products. So I think the sector has really come a long way, and it's actually proving that it is something that has to be taken seriously. I think it was largely an experiment in the early days, whereas now it is an industry. There is a governing body, there are investors, there are funds raised exclusively to put money into solar pay-as-you-go. So I think it's very, very exciting to see this having grown.
That perfectly leads me to my next question, Nikhil. You mentioned about the GSM module, how the cost of data has dropped in the last decade. And in fact, even the cost of solar has dropped in the last decade. So it perfectly leads me to ask you, what does a typical product have? If you have to say something like, this is a pay-as-you-go solar product offering in its standard form, what does it include?
Sure. So I'll tell you what specifically M-Kopa does and then sort of give you a sense of what other companies do. Pay-as-you-go solar largely started off as a lighting product. So it was home lighting systems where you take two lights and a mobile charger in a box and hand it to customers. So that would cost roughly $200, where a customer pays $30 upfront, and the remaining $170 they would pay in increments of 50 cents a day. So most companies, or especially M-Kopa, when we started off and we did our first 5,000 pilot, it was very much a home lighting pay-as-you-go product for individual households. But many things have happened along the way, which is cost of solar panels have come down, cost of batteries have come down, the density that you can pack into a battery has increased significantly. So what we can offer customers now is much more light, much more power into pretty much the same plastic that we used to give them, into the same plastic battery casing that we used to give them many years ago. So we started off with two lights. Today we offer four lights, and we also offer a television. So many companies have now evolved into the next version of products, which is bigger batteries, powerful lights, and also television. So televisions, again, in 2014-15 was impossible to find and impossible to power because it just needed so much of energy and the panel and the battery just didn't have that capacity. Whereas you find screen prices, or, you know, thanks to the whole tablet revolution, the screen prices have come down significantly and TVs are much cheaper, much more efficient, and you can get a 32-inch TV, you know, taking less than 20 watts of power, which is fantastic. And now powering that with a battery that is much more dense and has much more juice in it compared to what it existed 5 years ago. So the product offering has changed from being purely lighting and something very basic to something that is giving them much more than lighting, which is a fan, a TV, a fridge, and many other products like that. And I think this will only keep getting better as battery technology continues to improve. In fact, a funny story, when we were selling 20-inch televisions and we went back to place a repeat order of 20-inch televisions, the supplier told us that 20-inch televisions are actually going to cost you more than a 24-inch television, which sounded bizarre to us because why would, you know, a smaller product cost more expensive? It's just that the volumes for the 24-inch were so much better that it made sense for the supplier to give you 24-inch TVs at such an attractive price, which is fantastic for the customer and fantastic for the industry. So we have really benefited from a lot of the macro trends that exist around products and technology improvements, and all of that is getting passed on to customers to have much, much more through the same solar system.
Take a moment to recognize the massive technological developments in the space. As Nikhil highlights, the solar panels have become more efficient and produce more energy per square meter of surface area. The growth of solar globally has brought the cost significantly in the last decade. A similar pattern is being observed in the battery technology as well. Advanced lithium-ion batteries are getting better, while at the same time, the growth in scale is bringing their costs down globally. Another key aspect is efficiency of appliances like TV and light. Modern-day gadgets consume less energy, thereby making the overall product offering a value for money. But for a solution like pay-as-you-go solar, one key aspect that is even more important is financing, and especially how it is managed on a day-to-day basis, like in terms of cash disbursement and payment collection. So how has mobile telephony and emergence of digital payments helped scale up the business?
It's been absolutely critical. And I think it's not just for a sector like pay-as-you-go or energy, but I think mobile phones is one of the biggest success stories that, you know, in modern history, in emerging markets especially, because some of the products and services would just not reach people if it wasn't for the telephone. So you're seeing a lot of innovation in health tech, in agri tech, in education at the back of mobile phones, and energy is no exception to that. We have benefited hugely from people being able to talk to us, pay us remotely, and devices that can communicate with us that are in places that we can just see on the map. And I think that's been very critical for us in the business. Now, what M-Kopa does, and many other energy access companies do, is give them the product and collect money over a period of time. And the best form of collection that we have found in places like East Africa is digital payments. Now, just think of this in the Western context. You know, if there was Amazon or eBay, and there was no credit card or no debit card for them to collect money remotely, it would have been a really hard business to take products and services to people where you actually have to bet on them paying cash and you physically have to meet them to pay cash. So a big enabler for online platforms to have taken off in the West is the underlying payments infrastructure. And that payment infrastructure looks very different in places like Sub-Saharan Africa, which is largely your mobile. Your mobile is your credit card or your debit card, and people are able to pay through that. So we have built the business at the back of, you know, mobile phones and believing that mobile phones will continue to be in every pocket and each of them will have access to digital payments as well. So we struggle to go into countries that do not have mobile payments or do not have digital infrastructure, like especially countries like Nigeria, where they are trying to get digital payments off the ground, but it's just not taking off. So even if I sell you a pay-as-you-go product and I don't know how to collect money from you, business will really struggle. So it's been critical. It continues to be critical. And I think that that relationship will be very tight even going forward.
You mentioned about the challenges that you face when you go to a country where there is no access to like digital payments. Are there any other challenges that you generally foresee when you have to scale up the business across countries in other parts of Africa?
Oh, absolutely. I think challenge is the second word for this industry, I believe. You know, there are so many things that we're doing that are new and bold and that have never been done before. So it does come with a large set of challenges. Now, I mean, before I sort of address the question specifically on international markets and expansion, I want to talk a little bit about what some of these pay-as-you-go companies are doing. Now, a company like M-Kopa, we to the customer seem like, hey, we're just selling a solar product. But if you sort of distill what we really do, there is a hardware vertical that exists in our business, which means we produce all the products, we manufacture them, we design them. Then there's a software part of the company, which is making sure that the SIM card is talking to the 800,000 batteries, we're receiving the millions of mobile money payments, data is getting through all the devices, right from the warehouse till, you know, customer using our product 7 years later, all of that flows seamlessly on the platform. Then we have a huge distribution arm, which is number of agents, number of shops, after sales service, etc. And then we have a bank as well, which is looking at the credit aspect of financing customers. So for one business to have these four very big verticals, which is hardware, software, distribution, and finance, is not very usual for any typical business. So if you think of FMCG, they do distribution, they do a little bit of product, but they definitely don't do financing. Think of microfinance, they do financing, they do distribution, they don't do hardware or software. So to combine all these four aspects into one business makes the business inherently quite complicated and quite difficult to scale easily, which means you have to get into a country, you have to find people who can understand software, you have to find distribution people, you have to find credit people. So I think that is a lot of challenges that come with wanting to run an integrated business like this. Now, specifically looking at, you know, countries that companies want to expand to outside the countries that they work in. I think the challenges are, some of them are macro and some of them are even, internal to the industry as well. So talking about the macro challenges, it is things like mobile money availability, government policy, regulation, ability to import products easily, VAT on the product. So all of them have to be considered before, you know, you make an entry into any of the countries. Then you get into things like, okay, market, are people able to pay? Is it an attractive market for the price points that make sense for the business? Then you also go to a more internal question saying, what is the appetite of the business to go to another country or bet that another country is going to grow and get you to profitability? Now, bear in mind that, you know, there aren't many companies, or I think almost none of the companies in the pay-as-you-go space are profitable purely on their pay-as-you-go model yet. So it's very much a venture-funded, VC-funded industry that is looking for profitability, you know, in the coming years. And I think companies like us also are showing that there's a path to get to profitability, and there is some very positive signs. But as an industry, profits have still eluded everybody. And if that's the case, you have to really prioritize whether going into five more countries makes sense, or, you know, building your base in the country that you are. So I think these are all very important questions that don't have the right answers. And I think business continue to figure out what is the most relevant strategy for each of them. But I think expansion has not been as easy as we would have liked. And I think this is something that a couple of companies have talked about publicly as well. They would have wished to be in 10 countries, wished to be in 25 countries, but it's been much harder in reality to make that happen between internal and external factors.
Those are really interesting points and pretty valid as well. Before I get into more on the business model thing, there is one question that keeps probing me from time to time. Like in India, for example, the grid reliability was a challenge for a long, long time. And in the last decade, when the electrification pace was picking up, we didn't see much of pay-as-you-go take off. The Harish Shinde story was a success story, but it didn't take off in a big way. Any thoughts on why you think it didn't take off the way it has in Africa, for example?
Not any thoughts. Lots of thoughts on this because I've always wanted to, you know, I'm Indian. I've grown up in India and I've seen this problem of electrification firsthand through my time at Selco. So I really did want to take pay-as-you-go to India. And I spent a lot of time in 2016 going back and forth, running pilots, understanding the market and really scoping out, you know, what are the opportunities and challenges of going or bringing pay-as-you-go to India. And I think I would summarize it as three. One, the electricity was catching up in unprecedented ways. You know, it was great to see the team that was running the electrification program, and they were committed to putting a line in every single village. Now, it's the project has come a long way, and you know, statistics show that something like 250 million people out of 300 million people have got electricity in the last eight, nine years, which is phenomenal. I mean, as an Indian, I'm very proud that has happened. So electrification catching up is one. Therefore, the alternate models become, you know, less relevant. Second is there was no mobile payments, especially in the consumer segment that we were looking to sell to. Just receiving money from them was a cash economy, and building a business with needing to collect money physically on cash is going to be very hard, and it's not a thing that most pay-as-you-go companies would like to go through. And the third is the cost of alternatives. So kerosene has been subsidized in India for a very long time. And it has been an issue that the government has, you know, there are many schools of thoughts on, you know, how it needs to be addressed. But the point is, kerosene is subsidized in India. And if it is subsidized, it means the cost that the customer pays for energy is significantly lower than the true market cost. Now, if I have to build a product or service that is at the price point that the customer is currently paying, we were just not able to see viability. Whereas here in East Africa, kerosene isn't subsidized, so you pay the full price. So for us to build a business that offsets that full price of kerosene was quite attractive. Whereas in India, we weren't able to really see that. So electrification catching up, lack of mobile payments, and kerosene being subsidized. These are the three reasons why we weren't able to take MCOPA to India. And this is, I think, a lot of the reason why many companies have not been able to bet big on India or see any successes there. There are literally, I mean, just a couple of examples, and none of them you could call a roaring success as such in India.
At this point, I would like to reiterate Nikhil's point of view that pay-as-you-go solar couldn't survive post 2015-16 because of the rapid progress in electrification across India, which meant pay-as-you-go solar was losing its shine in India. However, if technology solutions like mobile payments, which is pretty big in India at this point in time, was available a lot earlier, India could have embraced pay-as-you-go solar very early on. It was just a matter of time and coincidence. Again, companies like Selco even used the early mobile phone technologies to offer prepaid solar as a service. So moving on to my next question on how MCOPA and pay-as-you-go solar as business survives with increasing electrification rates in Africa, this is what he had to say.
Absolutely. I think this is a thing that we see and we are asked about. And if you think about it, in the last couple of years, the electrification rate in some countries in Africa have outpaced the population growth, and which means that electrification is catching up in reasonably good ways. Now, here's how we see it as a business. There are two aspects to it. One way is, at some point, when grid electricity reaches your house and you're a customer in, let's say, rural Kenya, you're going to say, hey, I've been buying MCOPA's products for the past 5 years. I have a light, I have a mobile charger, a phone, a torch, a television, a fridge, a fan. I have pretty much everything that I need. And MCOPA is not just financing the energy, they're financing the asset as well. So even if you give me electricity, you're not going to give me a TV. So we see that customers may want to stick with a company like us and say they don't see a need for the grid for at least the domestic applications. So fast forward, 5 years later, and the grid reaches a customer in Kenya and they say, do you want the grid? They should say, I don't think so, because all my needs are met by MCOPA at a convenient payment, and it just is flexible, easier for me, and they give me the asset and grid after sale service. So I think there's an opportunity to imagine a world where the grid catching up may not fundamentally threaten what we're looking to do. So this is one aspect. I think the other way to think about it is how do pay-as-you-go companies evolve into working closely with the grid and not saying that this is not a grid compatible system. So which is basically building products that are grid compatible or grid ready, and I could take some charging from the grid, some charging from solar. I think these are all new business models that will emerge in the next couple of years as the grid start to catch up, more than it has been in the past. We are already seeing some signs. I think there are a couple of companies wanting to test grid interactive systems, and it could be quite an exciting opportunity to work out the interplay between grid and solar in a pay-as-you-go system. And actually, this is something that we have seen to some extent in India. So although it hasn't been solar pay-as-you-go system, the inverter market has been massive. So the inverter market is basically taking an inverter, a battery, and saying there are 5 hours in the day where you don't have the grid. We will plug that gap through this. Can solar and grid do something like that in the future in sub-Saharan Africa? I think yes. And I think that's the sort of future that we would see in the next couple of years as pay-as-you-go companies evolve even further.
That's a valid point that you put across, because in recent times, even many parts of the developed world have said, like, let's go off-grid because it provides a reliable power. And amidst the hurricanes that have hit many places, people just prefer to stay off-grid. I'm sure it's very interesting to know people in Africa would probably embrace off-grid as the only source of electricity. Coming to a final point, Nikhil, where do you see pay-as-you-go solar as an industry in the next few years? What is the future?
So I think, you know, what we have seen now has been an explosion of number of companies. There are many different ideas. There are many, startups trying to make a dent in the problem around pay-as-you-go. But last 1-2 years, and I think even Jesse has written about this, around seeing consolidation, seeing a few more, serious players that are here for the long haul and trying to build this into a profitable enterprise and build this into a profitable sector. So one is we will definitely see profitability, and that will be exciting for investors and for companies. Second is we will start seeing much more work on asset financing, because even if energy is becoming easier to provide, it'll be the question will largely loom around what are the other products and services that you can offer customers. So whether it is taking a hardware product that you want to finance them, or taking them products and services like cash loans and education loans, or could it be integrating with companies like Jumia that provide online platform and you can. So I think there's a lot of innovation possible in the space of taking products and services to individuals in the next couple of years that will go beyond just primarily solar as such. So I think we're all very excited to see where the future is with pay-as-you-go, but it'll definitely be beyond just lighting or just television.
Hey Nikhil, it was really a pleasure. For a long time, I was really keen to understand how the entire model of pay-as-you-go solar operates in Africa. I mean, I've just read case studies of how M-Kopa has really transformed the way Africa is receiving power. So it was a good experience and good to know from a first-person perspective of how this industry has evolved. So thanks again for taking time and sharing your views on the podcast.
Absolutely. Such a pleasure, and a really great initiative with Mission Shunya. Keep up the good work, and enjoy listening to your podcast as well.
So with that, it brings to end yet another episode on the Mission Shunya podcast. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please let your friends and colleagues know about it. You can spread the word on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, WhatsApp. You can share the episodes to a friend or a colleague. And if they liked, even they might consider subscribing to the podcast as you do. The podcast is available on all major platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, Gaana, JioSaavn, and many more. And if at the end of the episode you actually considering putting a solar on your roof, then you might as well check the earlier episode on step-by-step process to get a solar rooftop system done. With that, it's a wrap on this episode. Signing off, this is Mission Junior, towards a zero carbon economy.